The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So coming together, meeting like this, is a time to exchange views, hear teachings, and meet together. And for that to have benefit and to bring us the results we need, we first need to establish a firm foundation of peace in the mind. It's like when you build a house, you have to prepare the ground very well and lay very solid foundations. And so now it's our time to return to our own inner foundation and observe very clearly the nature of the mind, observe ourselves. The past has gone. There's no need to worry about that. The future is not yet here, so we have nothing to worry about that either. What has arisen is the present moment, and that's where self-knowledge lies, in the present moment. We come to know and understand the process of our body. There's an in-breath, and we know the in-breath. There's an out-breath, and we know the out-breath. And when we take up this model or this practice, this is what leads us to a state of freedom, that of being in the present moment and seeing things as they really are, with a measure of clarity. For this we need sati, mindfulness. Mindfulness to know the in-breath. Mindfulness to know the out-breath. The mind relaxes. The mind lets go. If the mind is relaxed, then there's no basis for tension, pressure, stress, anxiety. Nothing obscures the mind. This can be called samadhi or concentration meditation. So for this we hold the body erect and bring our awareness to the present moment. We're establishing self-awareness in the way of the awakened ones, the enlightened ones. So I pay my respects to all the monks gathered here and extend my greetings and blessings. I wish you growth in Dhamma and growth in happiness to everybody here who has gathered together in this place with the faith and interested to study and further understanding of Dhamma. So today, this is a nice chance, a good opportunity for all of us to meet up like this and get together and support each other, like one big family, like relatives coming together. And this warm feeling we have here, this feeling of interconnectedness, relatedness, gives rise to a certain well-being, which is something we can bring into all our interactions. So tonight then, this is an opportunity to discuss issues with related to our living together in society, in community. And the teachings of all our ancestors, all our predecessors, have always taught us to give very great importance to our lives, to how we live our lives. Because life is of something which is of great intrinsic benefit and value. And if we genuinely feel that life, our life, can be of true benefit, of true value, then we have to ask the question, how? And so this is an issue we have to give great importance to and study. Life with regard to the material aspect of life is something we're all quite familiar with. We know nature. We can talk of the physical world, the natural world, natural resources. We can speak of the minerals which there are in the world. And we can also speak of elements. We traditionally speak of earth element, water element, fire element, and wind. And with regard ourselves, we add the element of space and consciousness. This is one way of conceiving of ourselves. And when we are able to observe ourselves in the context of elements, seeing ourselves as composed of various elements, then we see that there's nothing of real essence within us. We experience a sense of being part of nature, arising and passing away. And the result of this is that we're able to experience life in a more broad way, rather than a limited way. Because we see that actually, as human beings, we're all the same. Whatever lives we lead, wherever we live, our lives all take up the same essential form. That is to say, we arise somehow, we remain for a certain period, and then we pass away. So when we see ourselves in this way, then this doesn't give rise to a sense of self-importance or conceiving an essence or a self in the body. And so we don't fall under the power of delusion. But our minds, mental health, mental well-being, is something we have to study and understand. This is what we call the nama dhammas, the aspect of mentality. We have the physical part of life, and we have the mental part. And with regard to the mind, then we can perceive it or describe it in terms of positive and negative, or those aspects of the mind which we call good and bad, those things which are wholesome or unwholesome, those things which bring us benefit and are to our detriment. And with sati, which means mindfulness, we're able to observe ourselves, to observe both the material aspect, the body, and the aspect of the mind, the mentality, the aspect of the mental realm. And observing our minds with mindfulness, then, is different from simply acting, thinking, based on various sense contact which arises based on our what we call sense consciousness. We're able to stop and observe the mind with what's called self-awareness. And this gives rise to right view or right understanding. Right understanding can be described as the experience or a view which doesn't lead one into agitation, neither oneself or other people. Right view will always lead us to experience a feeling of letting go, a feeling of relaxed, being at ease. Rather than feeling heavy, there's a feeling of lightness. Rather than thoughts, mental states bound up with gain and loss, getting this or losing that, there's a feeling of enough. There's that feeling of satisfaction when nothing is needed to add to this particular experience. And this is freedom. Nothing obscures the mind, and one goes beyond delight and beyond aversion. One's no longer bound up by pleasure and pain, wanting and disliking. This is what we call the mind which is at ease. When the mind is peaceful and still, then the mind will be at ease. And this is true happiness. This is the happiness we're all seeking. And it's something which we can all acknowledge and all experience for ourselves, because the mind at peace, the mind at ease, feels cool. And this is something we can develop in ourselves, just like in the material world. If we know how, we can use and adapt and manipulate the world's natural resources to be of great use for us. We can produce food, we can make clothing, we can build houses. And so with regard our minds, if we give our lives true importance and think of ourselves as, the word is manussa. Manussa means human beings, but it has the implication of high-minded beings or true human beings. then we have this, what that means is we have this capacity to develop our minds so that we can lead our lives in a way where every moment we can experience this cool and this feeling of being at ease. And so this is what we call true knowledge or true understanding, just in the same way that light dispels darkness. Knowledge and understanding dispels this feeling of dis-ease. And knowledge and understanding with regard to our lives is that which leads us away from danger. For this purpose, we have to cultivate what's called sati sampajanya. This means mindfulness and clear comprehension in every posture, whether standing, walking, sitting, lying down. Every interaction we have with the outside world and with society must be bound up with clear mindfulness. And in doing so, we can just be the witness and observe our experience as simply a natural process of arising and passing away. And when the mind is operating like this, then all sense of enmity, negativity, hatred disappears naturally. Unlike when the mind is obscured and bound up by delighting in this and being unhappy with that, or wanting this and not wanting that, or liking this and not liking that. That's what we call not Dhamma or not truth. And that's that kind of mind state, this delight and aversion, wanting and hating, this is a lack of development within us where we haven't yet realized our true capacity. So if we're able to contemplate very deeply, then we'll establish a firm foundation within ourselves and be free from this attachment which gives rise to delusion. The stronger the attachment is, this giving oneself self-importance, or even conceiving of an essence in oneself, conceiving of a self. And whenever that experience arises, straight away there's dis-ease. That's where dukkha or suffering arises. So understanding these principles, this Dhamma, which is of great value to us, is something which is our goal, which we can do. And this is not something which is limited to any particular race, creed, nationality, age, sex, or any other kind of group. It's a universal truth which we can all experience.
การปฏิบัติคือการทำหน้าที่ในการจัดการเราทุกคนจะต้องมีส่วนของการจัดการ การจัดการนั้นจะเป็นประโยชน์ได้ก็ผู้ทำหน้าที่ของการจัดการนั้นจะต้องมีความรอบรู้และก็มีความรู้เห็นในลักษณะที่มันเป็นส่วนของความถูกต้องด้วยฉะนั้นเรามีส่วนของการปฏิบัติจะต้องมีส่วนเกี่ยวข้องกับสังคมอารมณ์ที่อยู่รอบข้างเพราะเรานั้นมันมีอุปกรณ์ที่จะต้องเกี่ยวกับสังคมมีตาก็จะต้องเห็นมีหูก็จะต้องได้ยินมีจมูกก็จะต้องได้สัมผัสกับกลิ่นทำนองนี้ตาเห็นมีอะไรหูได้ยินมีอะไรเรามองลงที่ความรู้สึกของเราเองถ้าตาเห็นเกิดความยินร้ายหูได้ยินเกิดความไม่พอใจเกิดความรู้สึกไม่สบายในลักษณะอย่างนี้เราต้องรู้จักหยุดทำหน้าที่เป็นผู้ดูคือหยุดเสียระมัดระวังระมัดระวังอะไรระมัดระวังไม่ให้เกิดความรู้สึกยินดียินร้ายนั่นมันครอบงำสมมุติว่าเรามีส่วน ได้ยินเกี่ยวกับคำนินทาอันเกิดขึ้นจากความทุกข์ของบุคคลอื่นที่เขามีความขุ่นเคืองเขานินทาว่าเราไม่ดีถ้าเรามองในแง่อารมณ์ของเราอยู่ในสภาพที่ขาดความยับยั้งก็จะเกิดความรู้สึกมีความทุกข์เกิดขึ้นอย่างน้อยก็เกิดความไม่พอใจเมื่อเกิดความไม่พอใจถ้าเรามีความรู้สึกของความเป็นผู้มีสติรู้จักว่าความทุกข์นี้มันเป็นอากัปกิริยาอากัปกิริยาที่จะทำให้เกิดความรู้สึกเป็นที่มาของศัตรูหมู่อริเราก็ไม่ส่งเสริมเราก็มองไปอีกในรูปแบบหนึ่งเพื่อให้เกิดความรู้สึกมีลักษณะมีอารมณ์คลายไม่อยู่ในสภาพที่เรียกว่าเราร้อนขุ่นเคืองเรามองไปที่คนที่มีส่วนของการแสดงออกในการใช้คำพูดที่เราไม่ยอมรับเราก็มองในแง่เขาไม่สบายเขาถูกความรู้สึกโลกร้ายเขาครอบงำอารมณ์ที่มันเป็นส่วนหนึ่งของธรรมลมนั้นแผดเผาเขาอยู่ในสภาพที่เรียกว่าหาความรู้สึกเป็นอิสระไม่ได้ถ้าเรามองไปในแง่อย่างนี้เราอาจจะเกิดความรู้สึกมีความสงสารมีความเมตตาเราก็จะไม่โกรธตอบเราจะให้เขาอยู่ในสภาพปกติคือในสภาพที่ไม่มีลักษณะเรียกว่าเราร้อนเราก็ถามเขาได้มีอะไรคงจะไม่มีเวรคงจะไม่เป็นที่มาของภัยอันนี้ก็อาศัยการมีส่วนของความรู้สึกมีความรู้ตัวของเรานี่รู้ตัวขณะที่มีส่วนธรรมลมที่มันเกิดขึ้นกับจิตอย่าให้คนอื่นมองให้ก็ไม่ได้ต้องตัวเองนั่นแหละต้องรู้จักตัวเองเราไม่สบายเป็นยังไงก็พอที่จะรู้จักได้เราไม่สบายแล้วก็บอกว่ามันอันตรายมันร้อนถ้าร้อนแล้วก็บอกว่าไม่น่าปรารถนาแล้วก็มักคิดกันในแง่อย่างนี้ดังนั้นพระพุทธเจ้าก็ดีบัพพบุรุษของเราก็ดีท่านจึงสอนให้เราระมัดระวังของร้อนถ้าเราจับถูกวิธีมีคุณมีประโยชน์ใช้ถูกหลักในทางให้เกิดความรู้สึกมีคุณค่ามันก็มีคุณค่าเราทั้งหลายมีส่วนเกี่ยวข้องกับการดำเนินความเป็นอยู่จะต้องอาศัยพลังงานสิ่งที่มันเป็นส่วนที่มีลักษณะร้อนอย่างนี้อย่างน้อยก็เหมือนกับไฟนี่ไฟให้แสงสว่างในเวลากำจัดความมืดเราก็ได้รับความสะดวกไฟให้เกิดความอบอุ่นและกับไฟทำให้เราได้อาหารที่มีคุณค่าต่อร่างกายก็ไฟจากไฟทั้งนั้นถ้าเราจึงมองในแง่ดีอันนี้ถ้าเรามองในแง่ดีเราก็เห็นแล้วว่าสภาพเหล่านี้ไม่เป็นอันตรายไม่มีอันตรายมีแต่ส่วนที่ทำให้เกิดการสร้างสรรค์ให้เราเกิดความเฉลียวฉลาดมากขึ้นให้เราเกิดความรู้สึกรอบรู้มากขึ้นถ้าไม่มีสิ่งเหล่านี้เราจะไม่ฉลาดเลยเราจะไม่มีความรู้เลยอันนี้พระพุทธเจ้าท่านยังสอนให้เรานั้นอยู่อย่างมีความรู้สึกระมัดระวังฉะนั้นการระมัดระวังนั้นมันไม่เสียหายไม่ใช่ละแวง ระวังก็เพื่อให้มันอยู่ในสภาพที่พร้อมถ้าอยู่ในสภาพที่พร้อมแล้วจะไม่มีอะไรเสียหายเหมือนเราทั้งหลายที่อยู่ในพื้นที่อยู่ที่บ้านตัวเองนี่ถ้าเราอยู่ที่บ้านเราระมัดระวังอยู่เราก็เห็นที่มีส่วนเกี่ยวข้องกับบ้านเราอย่างน้อยก็มีเพื่อนมีพ่อมีแม่มีบุตรมีธิดาแล้วยังมีอีกส่วนที่ถือว่าเป็นส่วนจะทำให้เกิดความรู้สึกระแวงนั้นก็คือผู้ไม่หวังดีอันนี้ก็ต้องมีถ้าเราเห็นอยู่รู้จักอยู่มันก็ไม่สามารถที่จะทำอันตรายเราได้อันนี้ก็คล้ายๆกันฉะนั้นภัยถือว่าเป็นส่วนหนึ่งของสิ่งที่มีโทษมีอันตรายคือความรู้สึกของความหลงผิดประเภทอกุศลอารมณ์แบบทำให้เกิดความรู้สึกไม่ดีเช่นเกิดความรู้สึกของอาการของความอยากไม่รู้จักประมาณที่เราเรียกว่าความโลภความขุ่นเคืองอารมณ์เล่าร้อนจิตใจหงุดหงิดมีลักษณะเรียกว่าไม่อยู่ในสภาพที่เยือกเย็นท่านก็เรียกว่าอารมณ์ของความโกรธเปรียบเหมือนไฟได้ความหลงก็เช่นกันเรามีสติเรามาส่งเสริมด้านความรู้สึกอันนี้ให้มันมากขึ้นมากขึ้นถ้าคนมีสติอารมณ์แปลกปลอมสิ่งแปลกปลอมครอบงำไม่ได้มันก็ไม่มีโทษไม่มีอันตรายฉะนั้นโลกธรรมถือว่าเป็นส่วนหนึ่งที่จะต้องมีส่วนเกี่ยวข้องการอยู่ร่วมกันในสังคมท่านจึงให้มีการกำหนดโลกกันให้รู้เห็นกันถ้ารู้แล้วก็รู้จักใช้ด้วยในที่สุดจะเห็นเป็นสภาพทำให้เกิดความรู้สึกมีน้ำใจแบบอบอ้อมอารีเอื้อเพื่อเผื่อแผ่เมื่อเราทั้งหลายที่มาอยู่รวมกันนี้แหละถ้ามองในแง่บุคลิกอาจจะแตกต่างกันบ้างแต่ถ้ามองเนื้อจะทำแล้วเหมือนกันหมด ลักษณะออกมาในรูปแบบเหมือนกันหมดทุกอย่างที่ท่านถือว่าสัจธรรมของธรรมชาติภาษาท่านเรียกว่าการเกิดก็เหมือนกันแล้วกับการแปรไปก็เหมือนกันการเสื่อมสลายก็เหมือนกันภาษาท่านเรียกว่าจะอยู่ในสถานที่ใดอยู่ในพื้นที่ใดสภาพอันนี้ไม่มีอะไรแตกต่างถ้ามองกันในแง่อย่างนี้เราก็ไม่มีความรู้สึกมีอคติคืออากัปกิริยาจะไม่เห็นว่าดีว่าเลวว่านั้นดีนี้เลวทำนองนั้นถ้าพ้นไปจากนี้มันสะอาดเหมือนน้ำที่เรามีการกันกองแล้วนี่มันสะอาดมันไม่มีฝุ่นละอองมันมีสารเจือปนก็เป็นน้ำบริสุทธิ์มันก็เยือกเย็นจิตใจอารมณ์ของเราก็เหมือนกันทั้งที่เรามีตาที่จะต้องเกี่ยวข้องกับการได้เห็นทั้งที่เรามีหูที่จะต้องได้ยินได้ฟังมันก็ไม่ทำให้เกิดความรู้สึกในทางวุ่นวายอารมณ์สบายมันก็ถอนความร้อนคือมันบรรเทาความร้อนและก็ถอนความเมาด้วยและก็ไม่มีความรู้สึกในลักษณะเรียกว่าอึดอัดขัดเคืองมันจะมีความรู้สึกชุ่มชื่นเยือกเย็นเป็นสุขโตภาษาท่านเรียกว่าสุขโตมีความสุขอยู่ทุกหนแห่งจะนั่งจะยืนจะนอนเกี่ยวข้องกับสังคมอารมณ์ที่อยู่รอบข้างล้วนแล้วแต่เป็นไปเพื่อความรู้สึกเป็นที่มาของมิตรภาพนั้นจึงจัดว่าเป็นบุคคลที่พ้นไปแล้วจาก เครื่องกลางกั้นอุปสรรคกีดขวางภาษาท่านก็เรียกว่าเป็นผู้ที่อยู่เหนือสิ่งต่างๆทั้งหมดท่านอยู่เหนือก็คงจะเห็นทุกอย่างในแง่ไม่เป็นอันตรายอันนี้ก็คล้ายกันฉะนั้นเราจึงต้องให้ความสำคัญต่อการฝึกทำใจให้ทำความรู้สึกให้มีอาการที่เรียกว่าไม่กังวลมีอาการคลายมีกายก็สงัดกายมีความรู้สึกเกี่ยวกับจิตอารมณ์ก็มีความสงบเรียกว่าจิตตวิเวกเกี่ยวข้องกับระบบของการเป็นอยู่วัตถุสิ่งของก็ไม่ได้มีความรู้สึกเห็นว่ามันมีอะไรจะต้องกังวลไม่พะวงเป็นห่วงเห็นว่ามันเป็นของบรรเทาเท่านั้นเองอันนี้ก็เป็นการวางความรู้สึกของตัวเองให้อยู่ในรูปแบบของผู้เรียกว่าผู้รู้จักประมาณผู้รู้จักประมาณมันก็ไม่มีโทษไม่มีอันตรายอันนี้เราก็มาปฏิบัติกันที่จุดนี้ให้เกิดความรู้เห็นในทางที่เรียกว่าบริสุทธิ์ถูกต้องเป็นธรรมนำให้เกิดความรู้สึกประเสริฐเลิศขึ้นมาเป็นส่วนหนึ่งของคุณธรรมของความเป็นมนุษย์ก็อยู่ที่นี่ไม่ได้อยู่ที่อื่น
One way of thinking about our Dhamma practice or of practicing Dhamma itself is in the light of doing one's duty or taking on the necessary tasks that we have to do with regard how we manage and deal with our lives. We all, in our lives, we all play certain roles of management or having to deal or handle situations.And so anything we do, anything arising which we're handling or relating to be successful, we have to have a certain circumspection and all-round clear seeing things very clearly. And in our Dhamma practice, it's something which we still, it's something which we can do all the time. When we relate to the outside world or living in society, it's something we have to do.Because everywhere we go, or in every situation, our eyes must see forms, our ears hear sounds, our nose smell odors, our tongues are tasting flavors, our body contacts and physical sensations, and our mind gives rise to thoughts and imagination. So Dhamma practice is all about understanding this process and asking ourselves, when the eye sees a form, what happens?When the ear hears a sound, what happens, etc. So, understanding this process, eye seeing form, ear hearing sound, etc. This is understanding our very own lives. This is looking into our experience. And if, when we do experience external sense impingement or anything contacts us, there's dissatisfaction, aversion, it's not liking,then straight away there's dis-ease in ourselves. So as Dhamma practices, that's the point we have to stop and to simply observe with great awareness. And then at that point be very careful, observing very carefully our minds and our mental states so that we don't fuel or nurture or buy into these thoughts of delight or these thoughts of aversion. And so in time they don't arise. Take, for example, being criticized. Somebody who is negative or prejudiced criticizes you, basically based on their own suffering. They're in some kind of negative state. Whenever we hear these words of criticism, then if we're not aware, straight away, a feeling of negativity, not liking it, resentment, whatever, arises. But if we see clearly that really what's at the foundation of their criticism, what's often behind it, is that person's own suffering. It's a certain negativity or prejudice on their part. Then, in ourselves, then we're able to just stop and not foster or indulge our own negative reaction. We can train ourselves simply just to let go. You just observe how when you hear something you don't like, it leads to your own heat and agitation. And we simply look at the person who said these unkind words or words of criticism, see how they are in a negative state, and they themselves unable to find their own inner freedom. And looking at somebody in that way, then instead of negativity, feelings of compassion or loving kindness can arise. And so then, when our own strong reaction is calmed down, we return to a balanced or normal state, then we might even be able to ask them, what's really the problem? And so this doesn't give, so we're stopping the cycle of anger or negativity or danger. This is a state of what we call knowing oneself. We have to be very aware of our own mental states. And this is not something that anybody else can do for us. We have to, each of us has to do it for ourselves. So we can just experience very clearly, what is it like to experience dis-ease or lack of comfort or lack of well-being? Usually it's a kind of hot, agitated feeling. So anything that's hot is undesirable. So the Buddha and all our ancestors, all the teachers of the past, always taught us to be very, very careful, to be very carefully observing our minds. But we have to understand the mind, understand heat in the mind, because heat is something which can be beneficial, just like and a value, just like heat in the world. Although it's usually painful and dangerous, we all need it. We all need energy, and energy is in some form or other bound up with heat. For example, the lights which give us this brightness, or the kind of heat which we need to cook our food. All of this comes from fire, which can be dangerous. But if we know how to use it and look in the good sense, then it's not so dangerous. So it can give rise to our own development and improvement. And it's the same with understanding. When we learn to understand our minds, then we can even learn from our own negative or our own hot mental states. So the Buddha taught us to be very cautious, very careful with our minds, but not overly suspicious, not, you might say, overly paranoid, but to simply be very clear and very ready to understand our mind and protect our minds. Just like, for example, anybody who has a home. You have to be careful of your home. There may be friends, relatives, children of yours who come to visit you, but then there may also be people who wish your harm, who don't wish for your well-being. But if you see very clearly everyone who's coming, then you're able to live free from danger. So what we call dangerous thoughts, dangerous moods, are those things which are unwholesome, which give rise to worry and negativity. Principally, desire which is, in a sense, which has no, there's no end to it. You can never end one's desire by gratifying it. It's called lobha in Pali. Then there's the state of mind which is hot and agitated, never feels cool and at ease. This is the state of anger. And the Buddha compared anger to fire, dosa. And then there's the state of what we call delusion, just not seeing things clearly. But if we contemplate and develop mindfulness, sati, then these states of mind, which are actually false and trick us, they won't overcome us anymore. So the Buddha taught us to use what we call the loka dhammas, the worldly factors, are all the experiences which we experience in our life, in order that we understand our life very clearly, and to develop metta, loving kindness, and warmth, and a spirit of seeking truth. So imagine everybody who's come here today, if we look at ourselves in the context of our individual characters or temperaments, personalities, then we'd say we're very, very different. But in the light of ultimate truth, we're all the same. We all arise, we're born, we remain for a while, and then at some point we pass away. So none of us are really any different. And when we really develop this view and see things like this, then this prevents biases and prejudices from arising. So the way the mind will work will not be labeling things, judging things as good and bad, or judging people as good and bad. The mind will be like pure water. Pure water, when it's free from pollutants or free from dirt, is cool and clear. We have eyes to see forms, we have ears to hear sound, etc. But we learn then to train our mind so that whatever sense experience arises for us, sight, sound, smells, taste, touch, then on account of it we don't feel confused or agitated or ill at ease. When we train our minds, the mind will be at peace. It will feel cool and no longer intoxicated and drunk by sense experience. It will feel cool and fresh. And a word we use in Pali is sukkato, often translated as the accomplished one. But in this sense, it simply means a happy one, or one who's at peace. Any posture we're in, any activity we're undertaking, in any situation, the mind feels cool. And when our mind can experience this, then we can say we've gone beyond all obstacles, because nothing that arises in the external world has the power to affect us anymore or hinder us. This is somebody who's gone beyond everything, one who sees everything clearly so that no experience is of danger to that person. So this is how we train ourselves to go beyond agitation, beyond concern. We have a body, we train ourselves to be aloof from the body, no longer bound up with the body, attached to the body. We train ourselves to go beyond wholesome and unwholesome mind states. We call this aloofness or seclusion of the mind. So to train this, we develop moderation with the external world, always knowing moderation with regard to the external sense realm. And if we practice in this way, this leads to a mind which could be called pure, or which is correctly established in line with the laws of nature, or Dhamma. And this capacity to develop ourselves, this capacity to realize the highest potential which we have as human beings, this is not something which lies anywhere else other than within ourselves. Food, material food, is something which is of great importance and benefit to all beings. We call this ahara. If without food, then we can't sustain ourselves for very long. And it's the same food for the physical body. It's the same then with regard food for the mind or food for the heart. We call this Dhamma Ahara, or the food of Dhamma. What Dhamma Ahara, or the food of Dhamma, is the spiritual qualities or the virtues which we can develop. And if we have virtuous qualities or inner spiritual qualities nourishing us, then this is to the great well-being of oneself and of society. This is what we call living a life of perfection, or bringing our lives to fruition. So one of the very famous teachings or injunctions of the Buddha was to live a life of great benefit for oneself and others, cultivating great heedfulness or mindfulness in our lives. So we have to cultivate these spiritual qualities, and it's not to be done anywhere else other than right here, using our very own bodies and minds right here within us. We have the tools for the job right here. We have the body with its organs. We have our sense faculties. So we have to do those things which are called wholesome, those wholesome acts of body. Whenever we do something good, then goodness returns to us. When we act in good faith and act in a good way, then people won't harm us. They're less likely to be dangers for us. And so we can say on this level, on one level, just simply doing those things which are good, leading a virtuous life, is of benefit to oneself and benefit to the world. It brings a level of sukha, a level of happiness to ourselves. But there's another type of happiness, another level created, which arises based on the development of inner spiritual quality or developing the mind, which brings this sense of this feeling of coolness and freshness and ease, where one is no longer negative with regard to the external world. And the more we can cultivate spiritual values, spiritual qualities, then the more we'll be a refuge for other people. People will come to us, and through our own willingness to renounce and give up and give up time or care for other people, then this makes people happy. And ourselves will be happy as well. So this is the happiness of the mind, which has the food of Dhamma. One word we use for this is a mind which is, the word is punya, or bun in Thai, usually translated as merit or meritorious. But really, to expand on it, it's more like the mind which has inner wealth or inner well-being. A mind of, we have our inner richness or spiritual richness. The mind which is papa or evil or unwholesome, then it's very, very easy to see this will always lead to negativity, fear, danger. So anyone who does good things and leads a good life, then their mind is happy and balanced. And this is what we call sawan, it means heaven. Heaven is simply a mind which is very happy. Anyone you see, you experience them as your friend, as your relative. And this is just the simple natural result of good actions, whether actions of body, actions of speech, or actions of your own mental wholesome actions, then it becomes a more and more increasing cycle. If we do it more and more, we respect others, and we gain respect. We become a pujjaniya bukkala, it means a person who is worthy of respect, or one who is worthy of being venerated. And this respect in society arises based on spiritual qualities. So today on this occasion, I have nothing really special to offer you, just simply to point to the value of this life which we all have, and encourage us all to live lives which are of benefit, both now and in the future, in this world and the next. That'll be what we call a life which is not wasted. The Buddha said, "Kicco manusa patilabho." This means difficult indeed, is it, to be born as a human being. So you can also understand or imply by that, or infer by that, that it's a great fortune. We're very fortunate indeed to have this capacity or this potential to realize our highest human potential. But it's up to us to train and develop and adapt and improve our minds. That way it's as if we're embellishing our lives, we're with jewels. And in that respect then we can say we're leading a life of great beauty, or our lives will be beautiful based on the adornments of a well-trained mind. So today again, meeting together like this, I have nothing really special, but I just want to point out those things which are of value. So I'd like to express my happiness, my appreciation for everybody for giving up the time and renouncing, giving up your time to come together clearly then with the intention to develop spiritual qualities. And if society in the whole had spiritual qualities and cultivated what we call the Arya qualities, the qualities of the noble ones, the enlightened ones, then Wouldn't this be of great benefit to ourselves and to all sentient beings? We'll end this formal session with a blessing. We'll do a traditional Pali blessing.
Sampalokavinemonto
Sabasanta Pavajito Sabave Amati Kanto Nirguto Jatuvan Pavasabhi Diyo Vivajandu Sambaro Govina Satuma
the sound is on. Okay, I'm just asking Gil, well, do you want to close the evening? And he's passed the mic to me, so so that Ajahn Liam, as in the blurb, is a senior monk, a disciple of Ajahn Chah, and he takes on a tremendous amount of responsibility in Thailand. There's probably 300 branch monasteries in Thailand, and when there's something goes wrong, everybody goes to Wat Bapong, or goes to Ajahn Liam. And so that for him to sort of step out of the responsibilities that he has and come to visit us in America, it's a great blessing. He's been up at Abaya Giri, staying there. He'll be here in the Bay Area, or in up until June the 8th is when he leaves. So these next few days he'll be in the Bay Area. Tomorrow he'll be in Wat Budanosaon in Fremont, and I think that'll probably all be pretty much in Thai. Although once you get into the Thai realm, you never know what's going to happen. So it, Siripunyo may be involved in translating again. On Monday, Ajahn Liam will be giving a talk at Spirit Rock. He'll be doing a Monday evening talk there. And then on Tuesday, he'll be giving a talk at the Berkeley Buddhist Monastery, which is sort of Abaya Giri's regular Tuesday night, first Tuesday of the month, so that if people are interested, they can join. He'll also be, on Wednesday, we'll head back up to Abaya Giri, and we'll be there until he leaves on Monday. So the people are interested, welcome to join at any point. I appreciate everybody's interest coming tonight, and I think it's very interesting for Ajahn Liam to see the interest that there is in Buddhism here in America, and that is he has seen Westerners showing up in the back reaches of Thailand and seen some pretty wild characters showing up in the in the monastery, and to see a sort of a maturing of the both of our own communities, but then within the lay community and the society that it's coming from, it's not lost on him. He's not he isn't sort of a California gushy tell everybody what he's feeling, but it things slip out from time to time, and he definitely appreciates everybody's interest and sincerity, and I think that's not lost in him. I think it's good to take note of that, and I thank Gil for making this evening possible, and I think it's a great blessing for the community here to have him here.
Thank you. And I'd like to thank Ajahn Liam very much for coming and gracing us, blessing us with his presence and his teaching, and also that he was able to bring along so many monastics. This is a record. And I feel it's a wonderful, very, very, very fortunate to be with all of you, and to feel your years of practice and your commitment and dedication and the Dhamma that you manifest being here with us. So it's we're very grateful for all of you, and I hope you all come back again. Thank you.